Over the past little while, we've become kind of fascinated by Duck Dynasty. So I know some people are turned off by it, others are drawn to it, but on occasion it can be compelling television. And as you watch Duck Dynasty, one of the things you can get excited about is all the shenanigans and all the fun that they seem to have with one another, pulling pranks. And the father, or if you want to say the grandfather, the patriarch of the family, is a man by the name of Phil Robertson. And he has a phrase, happy, 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 happy. Well, if you had to find a happy day in the church calendar, today would be the day. So I don't know if you're happy, but today would be the happy day. Or perhaps to use a more felicitous word, a better word choice perhaps would be the word joy. This is that joyful Sunday in the church year. And it was designated, for those of you who don't know the liturgical history of the church, this is the third Sunday of Advent, and there were four Sundays that over the centuries developed that provided for us a season of preparation to anticipate the return of the Lord, his coming, as we think back toward the Nativity in Bethlehem, or as we think ahead toward his return promised at the end of history, or even as he comes to us on a Sunday at the Lord's table when we celebrate communion together. But this is a season to celebrate the coming of the Lord. Now, I know many of you, you probably have office parties or parties with friends and things that you do, festivities that we celebrate during this season. But many centuries ago, it would not have been quite that way. This was a season that was rather arduous, and it was an ordeal for many. Rather than feasting, it was all about fasting. This is a season we dress in purple, and you can see it indicated even there, simply symbols to remind us that the purple was a sign of welcome of royalty, but this was also a penitential season. That's what the purple signifies, a time of repentance, a time to think about the direction of our lives and where we're headed, whether or not we really are ready for the return of the Lord. And so the better word choice is perhaps not happy, 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 because I think of happiness and I think about chocolate. I think about green lights. I think about getting that parking place at the mall when you're in a hurry. You get the one right next to the door and you swoop in and say, all right! Those things make you happy. And when you don't get the parking place except the very last one across the road at the other parking lot, you kind of tend to grumble. Or you get in that what looks like the short line at the post office or the grocery store and suddenly the checker says, going on break, and you're like, You know, happiness, I think, depends upon our circumstances, but joy has a deeper root. And we've been talking about roots and root development, and we're going to talk some more about that today. But joy is a different word. And to rejoice, I like to say it this way, to rejoice is a choice. And many centuries ago, as people thought about the season of Advent, this was the third Sunday, and you notice that we lit the single pink candle today. That's to signify the third Sunday of Advent, or the Sunday of joy, because for those who were fasting, this was a long season, and it provided a time to kind of pull off, like at the rest stop, to pull over and rest and say, okay, we're going to fast, but today is a day to rejoice. Today is not a fast day, but today is a day to feast, to spend with family and friends, to eat, and to rejoice in what God is doing. A day of joy. So I want to take you to Matthew 13 as we talk about root development again and different soil types and the environments in which things grow and grow well, and perhaps some that don't grow so well. I take you then to Matthew 13. And Jesus told them many things in parables, saying, listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. Since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen. And then we fast forward just a bit, as Jesus goes on to explain to his disciples the significance and meaning. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root but endures only for a while. And when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. And today, as for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. And here we pause. Here ends our reading. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was surprised. We still take the free press, and maybe not many people do anymore. But as I was looking at the bill, there was an interesting, I noticed something. And they were charging extra on Thanksgiving Day for all the flyers. And they charged $2 extra for all the flyers to Peebles and Macy's and Kohl's and Sears and Toys R Us. And we could keep going on and on and on. $2 extra. And I said, isn't that interesting? The people who are receiving the flyers now, I don't know, is Christmas all about consumerism and materialism? You would think so if you took the free press. And they charged me $2 to read all the flyers I may not have wanted. Did anybody else catch that, what they did this year? Interesting to see how they handled it. I don't know whose idea that was, and I'm not sure how I really feel about that. But in light of that particular soil type that we're going to be talking about today, that third type, where the weeds move up and they choke out, and Jesus warns us about materialism, about wealth and worries, the things of the world that overwhelm us and choke what's really important. I wonder. Well, I suppose it doesn't matter how good your seed is. Anybody who's a gardener knows this. And it doesn't matter how good your soil is or what type you have. There's one thing I've learned, and this is it. You can't prevent weeds. I don't care what you do. There's no way to whip weeds. There just isn't. You cannot possibly defeat them. You can slow them down, right, Tim? But you can't stop them. There's just no way, seemingly, to halt their spread. And in my experience, you can try to eradicate them, and you can try to eliminate them, extirpate them, all those wonderful words that begin with E, but there's no way to actually defeat them, not finally. And Jesus, I think he knew that. The Bible's pretty honest about that. And if you were to read the next parable in succession there in Matthew, he goes on to tell us about the weed and the wheat, or the wheat and the tares that grow together. And that's the way it is in my garden and our yard. So in order for us then to plant wheat in hope of a harvest, I guess we're just going to have to get used to weeds. That's the way it is. We're going to have to tolerate them because there are going to be a few or maybe a lot. But that's just the way life is. There are weeds that we need to contend with. I was looking in a book on organic gardening, and one of the things they said, and I felt a little better after reading this, is that the total eradication of weeds is absolutely not possible. But what you aim for is to keep them at an acceptable level, whatever that is for you. All we can try to do is attempt to control their spread. I guess we could say it this way, that weeds are here to stay. That's the way it is, so I suppose we better get used to it. And to hear what Jesus had to say, and we know it too, that the weeds and the wheat will grow together and both will be there until the end. So I got to thinking, what is a weed anyway? What do you think a weed is? And I have kind of a loose working definition. My definition is a plant you don't want growing where it's growing. Something that you don't want growing where it is. And that can mean almost anything. It could mean dandelions in your lawn. It could mean witchgrass, right, Michael? Oh, I hate that stuff. Maybe hate's not too strong a word to use for that stuff. How about kudzu? Or loose strife, if you know what that is. Or broadleaf plantain? You know what that is? Those of you who are vegetable gardeners, you know what that is? Or stinging nettle? Or how about the goldenrod that's creeping into my raspberry bed and choking it out? It's just something I don't want growing where it is. I guess it's okay in the fields there, over in the meadows, but I don't want them overtaking my raspberries. So I looked up a definition, and I really wasn't far off. The book on organics, this is what it said. Simply put, a weed is an invasive plant growing where you don't want it. Like, I couldn't have figured that out. It's a plant growing where you don't want it, even if it's otherwise a good plant. But if you don't want it growing there, then to you it may be perceived as a weed. So what's the problem with weeds? Well, the problem with weeds is that they overwhelm other plants. They smother their growth. They compete for moisture and for soil nutrients. They reduce the yield that you get of fruits, vegetables, nuts, and all kinds of things. And we could keep going, but there are problems that weeds present. So what do you do about weeds? Well, I got to thinking about that, and I said, I think we need to know our foe. We need to know something about weeds and what they do and how they reproduce and how they spread and survive if you're going to have some possibility of controlling their spread. And there are ways that you can control their spread. You can mulch. You can dig a smaller patch that you can actually keep some control over. You can plant things closer together so that the weeds don't have room to sneak in between them. Just try telling that to a dandelion, though. Amazing what they can do. But I read that the number one weapon is, and I was going to bring one today. You know what the number one weapon of weeds is? You probably do. It has a long handle. A hoe. That's right. That's why we call this season ho, ho, ho. Okay, Tib, you've been waiting for that. I finally got a nice pun in. Okay. That's the number one weapon or the enemy of weeds, a hoe. And I don't know about you, but you ever wonder where weeds came from? Biblically speaking, the explanation comes out of Genesis. How did it happen? Well, it happened when a curse was placed upon Adam because he disobeyed God by eating of the forbidden fruit. So this is what God said to him. He said, Adam, cursed is the ground because of you. In toil or sorrow, in toil, you shall eat of it. In other words, you're going to have to get your food from the soil, but it's going to require hard work, toil and labor for the rest of your days. And then God went on to say, both thorns and thistles, it shall grow for you. And you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face, you shall eat bread until you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, but you are dust, and to dust you shall return. And finally, we're told that the Lord God sent Adam out from the Garden of Eden to cultivate the ground from which he was taken. He was sent out to cultivate the ground. Life was a whole lot easier in the garden. Work wasn't laborious. It was perhaps a pleasure. It was a joy. It was something that they did for God, who was the chief gardener and who gave a commission to Adam and Eve to tend his garden, to be stewards of what he had entrusted to them. It was only later, when disobedience became part of their lives, that they were cursed. Before that, work was a blessing, but after that, it became tedious and toilsome and difficult. And on the day that they were cursed, from that time forward, agriculture has become a real challenge, not easy. Weeds and thorns, they grow, and they're going to try to choke out the things that we want in order to make our world a better place, in order for us even to survive. Now, Ben and Jerry, I love their phrase, if it's not fun, why do it? But if you're a gardener, well, I don't know if I would call it fun. I think it is a joy. It's always a pleasure in the spring to put your fingers back in the soil. It is, once again, to work the soil after a dormant season. But it's not always easy. If you read a little deeper into the book of Genesis, you meet a man by the name of Abel who was murdered by his brother Cain. But what are the things that I like about Abel is that he had an opportunity to give God an offering. And the offering that he brought was an offering from the plants that he had cultivated. It was an offering of the first fruits, the first of the harvest in the autumn. That's what he brought to God, the best that he had, off the top, the best. And it cost him a lot to do it. And that's what I like about Abel. He gave an offering that cost him something, and God recognized that, and that's why his offering was acceptable, because God knew it wasn't easy. He was the one who went out to cultivate, to do and to carry forth what his father Abraham had been, or father Adam had been told to do. So let's think about weeds for just a moment. This is where we make the jump, and it's pretty obvious, isn't it? What weeds have crept into the garden of your life? I mean, this is just a simple metaphor, isn't it? Not rocket science, not too hard to understand. So what weeds have crept into your life that are threatening to choke out or strangle the good things that ought to be there? What weeds threaten your harvest? What worries are creeping in? What weeds are choking out the growth that God would like to see in your life? And of course, I guess if you think about it, choking has other meanings as well. How many of you have ever been involved in athletics? Sporting events? And it doesn't need to be just those. You can also think about school, the workplace. You had to give a big presentation, and on that day, what happened? You choked. You didn't do well. We talk about that when the time comes or the big game. Why is it that we always play better or do better? Why do things go better in practice for us than they do when the real moment comes? You know what I'm talking about? And then you're on the big stage and suddenly you stutter, you fumble around for words, you can't remember your lines, you lose a page. It just doesn't seem to go quite the way you had anticipated or hoped. We call it choking. We have a name for that. Think of Charlie Brown. You've seen the Christmas special over the years. What kind of tree does Charlie Brown choose? We even call it a Charlie Brown tree. You could say that Charlie Brown choked and all the others mock him because of the hideous tree that he brought back. Charlie Brown, way to go. He choked big time. So I don't know about you, but I suspect that for most of us, there are things that are causing us to choke. Worrisome weeds that may have invaded our lives. And the remedy that I would like to suggest to you this morning is what we might call a holy Heimlich maneuver. Could we call it that? There's something that perhaps for some of us is keeping us or causing us to choke. And we need to get that out. And we need to figure out what it is and what it is that God wants to do. What is it that has a chokehold on us and is strangling the life that God wants to produce and call forth? So I was listening to a couple recently, and they were talking about transformation. Last week, I defined growth in a particular way. I said growth is successful change. That's all growth is. It is a change that has been successfully negotiated. Successful change is what we call growth. And listening to this couple, they had four suggestions, and this is a couple that this is what they do. They have a healing ministry, and they offered four vital steps, and I just want to offer you these as a way to deal with those weeds in your life. I don't know if you want to write them down. I think they're significant, very simple, but I think powerful, and I have not yet begun to exhaust the meaning of these. Here they are. The first begins with self-awareness, and I'm just going to list them for you. The second, a willingness to risk. A willingness to risk. Thirdly, a willingness to suffer. A willingness to suffer. And finally, an unwavering commitment to change. Unwavering commitment to change. Or another way to say that, an unwavering commitment to Christ. Because believe me, he's all about change. And changing us for the better. Because he wants to produce a crop in us. So let's just think about self-awareness. Self-awareness. Let me just read a simple poem for you. How well do you know yourself? How many of you have done those Myers-Briggs tests, the personality indicators? Finding out what type you are, and somebody can probably tell you whether you're ENFJ or INFP. And some of us even know the meanings of all of that. Listen to this poem. Am I true to myself? I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know. I want to be able, as days go by, always to look myself straight in the eye. I don't want to stand with a setting sun and hate myself for things I've done. I don't want to keep on a closet shelf a lot of secrets about myself and fool myself as I come and go into thinking that nobody else will know the kind of man I really am. I don't want to dress up myself in sham. I want to go out with my head erect. I want to deserve all men's respect. But here in the struggle for fame and pelf, which is a word for wealth, here in the struggle for fame and pelf, I want to be able to like myself. I don't want to look at myself and know that I'm bluster and bluff and empty show. I can never hide myself from me. I see what others may never see. I know what others may never know. I never can fool myself, and so whatever happens, I want to be self-respecting and conscience-free. How well do you know yourself? And sometimes I wonder how well we can know ourselves without the help of others. Sometimes I think we need to be in community in order to hear what others have to say to us. How well do you really know yourself? The reason I say that is because I think we need to be willing to risk. And there are times when we don't know ourselves as well as we think we do. And are you willing to allow others? And here's where it starts to stretch and become uncomfortable. It's not just about self-awareness, but am I willing to allow others to speak into my life? Sure, as long as they say nice things. But do you want them to speak the truth? Hopefully they could do it with love, that they could do it gently, tenderly, with some sensitivity to you. But do we allow, you and I, do we allow others to speak into our lives? How can I be a better husband? How can I be a better wife? How can I better be a better son or a better daughter? How can I be a better mother or a better father? How can I be a better brother or a better sister? How can I be a better pastor? I love asking the question, but I think I'd be uncomfortable if you tried to answer it right about now. These are the questions that we might want to entertain. Are we willing to risk? Are we really willing to risk? How can I be a better disciple of Jesus? How can I improve? How can I get better? I wonder what weed killer we need to apply, you and I, to our lives. What weed killer do we need to apply, you and I? You know, yesterday we were picking out our Christmas tree, so Jamie and I had the opportunity, Kath being busy, so we had the opportunity to go out and look for a tree. And I would just say it this way: if you don't like the tree, I picked it out. If you think it's just so-so, then we picked it out. But if you really like it, then I want you to know that Jamie picked it out. You see what I mean? Are we willing to take a risk? Do you need to take credit? Do you need to have the glory? Do you need to be right? Do you need to win? Are you willing to ask those questions? What would it take for me to be a better pastor? I wonder how many of us will go home and ask our spouses. And I haven't tried this, so this is I'm just telling you what others recommend. And I'm afraid to try it, actually. How many of us will go home later and ask, boy, here's a test for the week, and we'll come back and discuss next week, okay, George? I want you to go home and ask Shirley tonight, Shirley, what can I do to be a better husband? And I'll make a deal with you, George. If you ask that question, I'll ask Kath that question, see what she has to say to me. I don't know who's getting a good deal here. Would you and I be willing to do that? To ask our spouses, the people who love us best? Oh, you want to know what, you really want to know where your weaknesses are? They know. They know. Ask your children, what could I do? Ooh, that hurts. What could I do to be a better dad? What do you need that I've missed or haven't recognized? Are we willing to take that risk? Thirdly, a willingness to suffer. Well, if you ask the previous question, guess what? You're apt to hear something that's going to make you uncomfortable. We all know there are weeds in our pasture. There are things growing there that we don't want in our meadows, things in our life that are choking what we really want to produce. If we want to produce a harvest, a good harvest, we know there are things that ought not to be there. I love what this couple said who was giving the presentation. They said, just realize this, that the more you try to follow Christ, the more you will fall out of favor. I didn't think about that. I thought the more you followed Christ, the more people would recognize who you are and see something good in you. They said, it works the other way around. The more you try to follow Christ, the more you will fall out of favor. In other words, people might not like you. They might not like what you stand for. This one started to make me squirm even more. Ready for the last one? We're coming to an end here. Really simple presentation for the day, but I hope it's profound. The fourth one, unwavering commitment to change. I will see it through. Are you determined? Are you resolved to see it through? All the way to the harvest, all the way to fall, spring, summer, all the way to autumn, to see what God will do with your life. Are you determined to see it through? A couple weeks ago, I was talking about soil conditions, and I've looked up the word before, but I mispronounced it. And when you get the very best soil, it's called friable. But I mispronounced it, and I pronounced it friable. And, of course, afterwards, somebody was quick to point out to me, you know that word is friable, Jeff. And so I could have gotten offended and said, yeah, all right. Thank you for embarrassing me in front of 80 of my closest friends, and thank you. But I decided, you know what? That's right. The word is friable, and I need to pronounce it accurately, correctly. I can remember one of my first pastors who said to me, you know, you don't want to make grammatical mistakes. Do everything you can, if you make one, to correct it. And it brought me back to that man. He said, we, because of our public responsibility, we need to do everything we can to get it right. And so when somebody offered that word to me, it's friable, I simply said, thank you. Friable, I've got it. I'm willing to make myself vulnerable sometimes. There's a story about St. Francis of Assisi that was told one day, a peasant, when St. Francis was passing through, accosted him and tugged on his stirrup. He was riding a donkey and said, are you Francis? And he said, yes. And he said, are you that St. Francis that they talk about who's so good and so kind and a helper of the poor? And he said, yes, I am he. And he said, then make sure you're as good as people think you are. And at that, instead of getting offended, St. Francis got down off the donkey, knelt and kissed the feet of the peasant and said, thank you. Thank you for reminding me of what I need to do and who I am. Do we have, you and I, an unwavering commitment to Christ? Because it is all about change, this life of ours. It's about transformation. God doesn't leave us where we were yesterday. We all want to grow. Wouldn't you like to see some measurable growth by the end of this year? As you think about New Year resolutions, the climax of this year, some of us know, those of you who are still in your teen years, you're growing. You can see that you've gained an inch or two in altitude. Others, maybe an inch or two. We have a girth control issue now. But have we grown inwardly? Have we grown spiritually, you and I? Will we see it through? Will we? Where are the weeds in your patch? What do you need God to do for you? If I had one tool that I could get you for Christmas, I think you know what that would be. I wish I had brought my hoe this morning. I'd present each one of us with a hoe this year. Sure, we'll tie a red ribbon around the handle, but that's what we're going to need in order to cultivate the kind of life that Christ wants to develop in us. And if you ever look at that, you ever think about the word hoe for just a second? Did you notice that little word becomes part of another word? If I add a P-E on, I think you get something different. You go from hoe to hope. So I hope this is going to be one of those messages that sticks with us for a while, that begins to make a change in our lives. Where are the weeds that need to be removed from your life? The things that are choking you, that have a hold on you, that have a chokehold, that need to go. My guess is, my hunch, you already know what they are. Are you willing to allow the Lord to cultivate them, to pull them out?